Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Great to have you with us. Joining us by phone, we have Mike Wood, the Public Information Officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Hey, Mike, welcome back, sir.
Good morning.
Hey, before we get into the big news, obviously dealing with the shooting and other things, I want to follow up on something that you and I talked about, gosh, now 3 weeks ago, I think. We were talking about how if you leave your car running and get out of it, that is actually, is it a crime or a moving violation?
It's a violation.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But this raised a question, which John had asked me at the time off the air, and I checked with you, but I wanted to get you to answer it, is what about remote start? If it is wrong, it's a violation for you to have your car running when you're not in it, failure to maintain control of the vehicle. This all came up in connection with Mike Kohler's incident, if I remember correctly. But okay, so what about remote starts for your vehicle? That's legal, right?
Yes, that's legal. And the reason for that, those cars, newer vehicles are built differently. If you start it remotely to warm it up or to cool it off before you get in there, if someone was to pop the window out and get it and try to steal it, it's not possible. The car won't function. It will die automatically when you try to put it in drive. There's different ways of preventing that theft, whereas vehicles that don't have that equipment, if you leave it running, the car can simply be stolen.
And perfect. That's exactly. But if you remote start it, get in, and then get back out, now you're in violation.
Well, if the key fob is not in there, it's still not going to function.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that's one of the key determinants, is whether it's fob dependent or not?
Yeah, then the officers looked at each of these cases individually.
Okay.
and determined whether it's a violation or not.
And by the way, I think I was wrong about that. Sorry, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Unfortunately, we find out that it was a violation when it's too late because the car was stolen. So automatically we know that it didn't have the anti-theft equipment on it. That's usually when we find out about it. Occasionally an officer will walk up maybe to a convenience store and remind the driver, hey, you don't need to leave that running, and it's a dangerous situation. And that's usually all it takes. It's usually not something that we will always cite people for.
Yeah, one of the things you and I talk about all the time, and Chip and Bob too, the sheriffs, is that, you know, there are laws people don't realize they're breaking, and the goal of the PD is not to issue citations. The goal is to get good behavior, and a lot of times ignorance is the reason people do things. I think I was wrong. I don't think that was about Mike Kohler. I think it was something else, but that's okay. I just wanted to make sure we got that answered. Before we get to the news of the incident over the weekend, I do want to talk about Lafayette, Louisiana man Brenton Tillman is facing a murder charge for a shooting that took place while I was on vacation at the Budget Inn in West Cervantes.
Yeah, from what we understand, they knew each other. They were here working. I don't know working where, but they were staying in the motel. An argument began on the parking lot, and one of them pulled a gun and shot the other one.
Mm. Mm. Okay. Man, just bad things. Bad things do happen. All right, so the one that everybody, of course, is very concerned about is what took place near Palafox at Intendencia, 2 a.m. on Sunday, July the 5th. Just a couple of things that we want to clarify. Of course, Chief Winstrom did a great job yesterday in the press conference. So far, we still only are saying or know that there are three guns and therefore three, gun users involved, three gunmen involved.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at, and we're gathering body cam footage, surveillance footage from downtown, and we're asking for the public, if you had a phone and you were using it to record before, during, or after that event, we're asking for that footage as well. And what we're hoping to do is, when we piece all this together, we have possibly a nonstop video of the entire event, and it takes hours and hours to do that. But that's what we're looking at right now. We want to assure the public, and both the mayor and the chief of police have talked to the mother of this 19-year-old victim and assured her that justice will be had. And we're going to keep on plugging away at this case until that happens. Now, we look at these comments on Facebook, and there's a lot of people on there that are saying, so there's not going to be an arrest for murder now, and that we went easy on them, and that's simply not true. The investigation is still ongoing, and homicide charges can and will be brought as soon as we're able to have a solid case. But unfortunately, these things take time to put together. But what we want to do is take our time and do it the correct way and make sure the charge sticks in court.
Well, and I thought Chief was very clear about this yesterday. He even used the word murder at one point, which is why I would expect that that's going to be the charge eventually. But just because a charge hasn't been given yet does not mean it won't be given, and I don't know why people misunderstand that. It seems very straightforward to me. He was also very clear that you have a lot of evidence that you're processing, including static cameras, body cameras, people who are volunteering cell phone information, which, again, you still want more if people know something and haven't revealed it yet. Crime Stoppers is available. They can call the police department. They can come in. You want help because it's very important, right?
Yeah, we could put together an hour video of this nonstop, and there's that one 3-second piece that's missing that's key. And that 3-second piece of video may be on somebody's cell phone, and that's why we're asking for any and all footage to be brought to us. If they would be so kind to do so, we would appreciate that.
Absolutely. I have some questions about, and I understand that a lot of this you may not be able to answer. And, of course, you know, you wouldn't tell me if you shouldn't tell me, and you don't need my permission, but I'm explicitly granting it to say I can't say yet, okay? Because I get that, and I agree. Your job is law enforcement and protect the investigation. It seemed like, based on what the chief had said, that this was, you know, pre-existing relationship, rival gang adjacent or gang members, a targeted attack, which means they were trying to kill somebody in particular. Do we know yet whether, or are you capable of saying yet, whether this was reciprocal gunfire? Like, was this a gun battle between people on both sides, or was this all in one direction?
We don't know yet, but what I can say is this beef is between groups has been going on for a couple of years now. So this is not the first time as far as a payback type situation. I don't know.
Okay.
And that hopefully will come out in the investigation.
Okay. Do we know yet, or can you say yet, whether the young person, the 19-year-old who was killed, whether in any sense, you know, he was involved in any of this, whether he was even the intended target or whether it's somebody else? Do you know? Can you say?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
That's, again, the six the folks that we're talking about, we do know they knew each other, but in what capacity, that's still all under investigation.
Gotcha. The chief had mentioned that they were maybe earlier in the night or even 20 minutes prior might not have been wearing masks. I got the impression that he was implying that maybe the people who were shooting were wearing something to conceal their identity at the time this happened. Is that correct?
Well, that's a possibility. So what he was talking about is how important this phone footage is. If we see one camera with the person putting a mask on or with a mask on, we're hoping that we can get some footage prior to that with that individual wearing the same clothes, the same height, the same weight without the mask on. That's why we're asking for this cell phone footage.
Okay. And then the charge against the woman was because the primary person that you arrested was the first person to raise a gun, first person to shoot, and then gave her the gun allegedly, presumably as an effort to conceal the evidence or not be able to be caught with the gun on his person. Is that what you believe happened?
Yes, that's what we believe happened. That's tampering with evidence. Unfortunately, we have that weapon back.
I thought this was a good question. I just want to make sure that we get the answer. Number one, is ShotSpotter is no longer active in our area, right? We don't have ShotSpotter right now?
No, we do still have it.
Oh, you do. But is it not downtown, or is it downtown?
It's certain parts of downtown. It doesn't cover all of it.
Okay, so is this part of downtown covered by the ShotSpotter net?
I would have to look at the map and see. I know it's very close if it's not covered, but that wouldn't have mattered much that night with the fireworks and all that going on. It would have been overwhelmed. But fortunately, the officers, there were, again, we've said this a bunch, that there were 50 officers on top of what we had down there last year. In fact, the staff command, not only the chief of police, but his staff was down there, and the chief and deputy chief Coverdale got into a foot chase and apprehended a young man that was firing mortars at people, and he ended up having a gun in his waistband. So when we say all hands on deck that night, that's exactly what we meant.
And that's exactly the question that I was wanting to ask is, you know, would ShotSpotter have mattered? And it sounds like the answer is no, not under these circumstances, for all the reasons you mentioned. Plus, now in my head, I really want to watch the video, although I don't want body cam of it. I want the side video watching Deputy Chief Matt, you know, former SWAT team leader, tackle a dude. that sounds like entertaining video. So I'll take one. I can get it. Other things I want to talk about with you, the curfew is, I know that's really not like your pay grade kind of thing. That's really a combination of the city council and the mayor. And of course, the chief has had an opinion about this. But, you know, is it the police department's opinion that having an enforceable curfew for minors would solve not just this necessarily, because we've talked about how that's not exactly what happened here, but just in general, give you guys an additional tool that would be helpful?
I don't know that it would in this particular situation, but it couldn't hurt. It's one of those situations where something like that certainly can't hurt, and you have to look at how it's going in other cities. Did it help or did it hurt or did it do nothing? And that's something that we have to look at.
Yeah, have you? I mean, my perception is that it seems like it would help, but it might be the kind of thing that you do because you think it does something and then doesn't really. Do you guys... does it work in other cities?
Well, we're looking at that, and unfortunately, a lot of times when a crime happens and you catch the perpetrator and they're underage, it's already happened. The crime's already happened, sure. and it's too late. So that's something that we'll certainly look at. And again, that's something that's up to the city council, the mayor, and the chief of police will also have a part of the discussion, and we'll see how that works out. But, we can go, what can we do? Everybody's going to talk about what are we going to do next year? If we go in there with, wands and have to check everybody for weapons, and we have the SWAT vehicle down there, the Bearcat, yeah, and all that, then we'll get accused of over policing. So it's danged if you do, danged if you don't. But suffice it to say that we will have a plan in place in addition to what we had this year to keep everybody safe.
Absolutely. Switching gears just a little bit. I don't know if you heard me talking about it about a half hour ago, but Gulf Breeze, like most Santa Rosa County, is actually working on putting in school speed zone cameras. The one reason I wanted to ask you about this is because with Pensacola Police, and I know you're one of the people that actually goes through the red light cameras and verifies them, the policy that they have approved is to let Navoa Global, who is the service for their red light cameras, that not a law enforcement officer will be reviewing the speed violations, which I think makes sense because you don't need to have the same kind of law enforcement judgment involved. Plus just, the resources necessary to do it. They're talking about it might be 10 times as many school speed zone violations as you have red light violations. But I wanted to hear your thoughts because you've been working with this program in Pensacola for so long. What do you think of that outsourcing to the company of that?
As one of the people that looks at these, I think it's a good idea to free up the officers from doing that, because it is a extremely intensive manpower situation, looking at every one of these violations. But on the other hand, a person is a person. A police officer is a human before he's a police officer. And people that are not sworn officers can be trained to detect or trained to determine whether a violation actually happened or did not. So saying that the folks at the company are not able to do this as good as a police officer is just simply not true. They can be trained to do that.
Is it in statute? Does it require a police officer to verify the red light cameras, or could that legally be outsourced also?
I don't think that there's a law that a sworn officer has to look at, and I could be wrong on that, but I don't think that it is. I believe that at some point you could employ civilian staff to do that, but that's just not something that we're looking at the Pensacola Police Department.
How much resource does it take PPD right now? Do you know? Is there a quantification?
It's a lot. In fact, we're looking at different ways to get these numbers down as far as the citations or the violations stacking up, and we're exploring also having officers look at this in an off-duty capacity and get compensated for it. And that's something that we're looking at right now to try to help get these numbers down, get the backlog down.
Wow. So the HR stress on your department is actually so high that for visual processing of the red light camera violations, that you guys are looking at, taking regular cops and using them off duty like they would use to patrol a, Seville or Walmart or a bank or whatever, because we need their man hours on the street on patrol so much, and it's starting to cause stress there. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah, that's what's happening. So we're trying to keep the backlog down. We don't want them stacking up. And there's a lot more violations than we wish there were. And hopefully once we get known as these cameras are in place, hopefully those violations are going to start going down.
One of the things, and I've talked about this with both sheriffs, but I haven't had a chance to talk about it with you, is the Florida State Supreme Court issued a ruling last Friday in which they said that knock and announce service of warrants is a mandate because the law says you have to do it. And if you don't do it right, the way it had been handled is that the evidence secured from, what kind of the philosophy is, the fruit of the poisonous tree, is the warrant wasn't served right. We're just going to exclude that evidence at trial. State Supreme Court decided that that is A, not in the law. You're not allowed to exclude the evidence, and it won't do that anymore. And B, it's not working to deter the bad behavior. And so they're going to go to what the law actually says, which is it's an enforceable misdemeanor against the cop who doesn't allow enough time for people to come to the door. Is this in any way going to affect you guys? Is there anything that you have to do differently because of this? Is there a concern that that would change police behavior, that you'd be worried under these circumstances because of that potential criminal charge?
No, because we're not doing that in the first place. It's very clear who we are and why we're there. There are marked police cars out front. There's loud banging on the door, yelling police, search warrant. So if that was something that we employed in the past, the no knock or very light knock situation, then that would affect us. But it simply doesn't.
Okay, very. Which I figured would be the answer, but it's my job kind of to make sure and ask. We always like to end with a cop myth or a did you know? Do you have one for me this week, Mike?
I got an email to where it was an elderly lady. It was this person's grandmother, and he was asking, is it legal to have a mechanic turn off the airbag on the passenger side of the vehicle? And according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, it is illegal for mechanics, dealerships, or repair shops to disable a functioning airbag unless they have permission. So there are permissions granted for very specific circumstances, such as a medical condition that puts the occupant at a higher risk from deployment than from the crash. So it is possible, but there's some paperwork involved at the state level.
Okay, so if that's something that applies to you, it is lawful as long as you go through the proper process. And, I mean, as we all know, those of us who have passenger airbag cars, the car is already built with a clumsy mechanism of weight that it'll disable the airbag if it detects weight below an adult size, because children can be more hurt by an airbag than they're helped by it. That's why you don't let kids ride in the front seat. But good note. Interesting note. Okay, I would have never thought about that. But, yeah, some people with health conditions or health apparatus or whatever, an airbag can be more damaging to them than, you know, it would be safety for them. So excellent point.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
If I can, welcome back, Candy. You guys are like cookies and milk. It's great.
Oh, thank you so much. Oh, I love you, man.
You guys are killing it. We love to listen to you. And that laugh is just, it's off the charts.
It is the best laugh in radio or not in radio, either way.
Hey, when you come in, we can do Sugar Hill Gang. Man.
Absolutely.
Mike. Wonder Mike.
Syndication after that.
Mike Wood is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department, and really a great friend. Appreciate all the time, Mike, and answering all the questions. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.